Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And you recognize him. We've got Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief. He's in the Colorado area. Still will not give us his exact location of the bunker, but he is hiding out there somewhere. So thanks for being on the show, Chief. I appreciate it. And he changes his look while we're talking live on the air. This is just incredible. And you guys have witnessed it if you're watching the video portion of the show. Hey, a shout out to our sponsors. You know, Gauls is our title sponsor. Don't forget that discount code. It's Radio15 to get 15% off your next purchase. We've got our satellite sponsor, ComplianceTechnologies.com. We also have GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.live, and TwoBells.com. They built a new online store at Legal Roundtable. And, you know, a shout out to Brian Burns for the Tampa Free Press. Thanks for carrying our content, Brian. Also, Ray Dietrich with FormerLawman.com and our very own Travis Shades with LawOfficer.com. Thanks to all those entities. And if you guys are looking for a place and how to watch the show regularly, you know, we're on every podcast platform known to man, including Spotify and Apple iTunes. The show's called Leo Roundtable, and we're also syndicated nationally on 47 radio stations and counting across the country. We're on social media on Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, X, formerly Twitter, True Social. The list goes on and on. The best way to do it, go to our website, leoroundtable.com, and that'll tell you all the outlets that we're on, links to everything, dates, times of the radio stations and the call signs, all that good stuff. So please check it out. Now, Chief, if it's okay, I'm going to go in and run through the stories that we're going to kind of whet the appetite here for the audience. The first one we've got: FBI steps in after Senator Lindsey Graham dies suddenly at 71 years of age following a Ukraine trip. And, you know, I think that took everybody in the states by surprise, that story. We've also got Democrats meltdown over ICE shooting while their own shutdowns blocked body cams. We will explain that. And then the feds target reporters after Air Force One security leak. We've got more leaks from the media. We got a carjacking suspect fatally shot at the end of a high-speed chase by Baltimore police officers. We got Phoenix police officers fatally shooting a 22-year-old when he runs towards a man with a knife. We got a screaming female in the background on that one. And then we got a listen to this, Georgia cop charged with involuntary manslaughter in the death of a teenager after accidentally discharging his gun during the arrest. Yeah, that's disappointing. And then a suspect killed, surprised officer injured when they both are struck by a vehicle during a foot pursuit. So, yeah, we got a lot to cover. So any words before we get started, Chief? Are you feeling 100% today?
Well, one question I had, did you change the settings on that theme song? It seemed like there was more bass and more drum at the beginning. Is that new, or am I just more sensitive to it since I got my drum set?
Oh, you got your drum set. Well, in all honesty, it's funny you should notice that, because I've noticed something, and I didn't know if I was the only one. So I swapped out my mixer board. So I have redundancy with what I do. So I've got, you know, three or four Alienware computers. I've got two of these mixer boards just in case anything goes bad. And sure enough, the power switch on my other one went bad. I couldn't turn it on, and it's been going bad for a while. But I played with it for like 10 minutes, and I finally said, okay, I'm taking out the old one. And it sounds, when I play the music and all the music on this one, it sounds like it's got more oomph to it. It sounds like the volume's higher and everything. So now that you say that, you may be onto something. I don't know why that is, but yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, I like it a little bit better now. But anyway, on to the news.
Well, let's go to start with this first one then. So FBI steps in after Lindsey Graham dies suddenly at 71 years of age, which is young, following his trip to the Ukraine. Now, this is at the Tampa Free Press at TampaFBI.com. You know, the surprising thing here is when I read that the FBI has stepped in to assist local authorities with this unexpected sudden death at only 71. Now, I know that I think that since that time, we've got the cause of death. They did a very quick autopsy, but I don't know how thorough the autopsy was. So the FBI's involvement might still be there. But the office of Graham, who represented South Carolina since 2002, announced early on Sunday that the senator passed away from a brief and sudden illness. And they called 911 for a cardiac arrest incident. And at his house at about 8:30 p.m., so in the evening, FBI Director Kash Patel wrote on X that the agency was assisting local authorities and has made every necessary resource available to them, which is great. Hopefully that'll work better than the last sheriff out west that didn't like the FBI and he ruined his own investigation. Now, due to the outspoken nature of the lawmaker, and look, I'm gonna mention a couple of things that people are probably unaware of. Many people, including those that work closely with Graham, were skeptical about the nature of his death. It just didn't make sense. He seemed like he was healthy and stuff. He was a vocal supporter of the U.S. involvement in conflicts abroad, including the Russia-Ukraine war and Iran clashes. And as recently as July the 4th, during the break in Washington, D.C., the recess, he went to Ukraine. He met with President Zelensky, visited a drone facility that was later destroyed by the Russians. He's also in the past been targeted by the Iranian regime. And they even were like jumping up and down in excitement over his recent death. And we've, I guess in another article, it said that he had recently, in the final hours before this went down, he didn't feel good. And people were telling him to get immediate medical help, and he was blowing it off, saying, look, I got a lot of stuff that I got to get done. I'll worry about it later. And according to accounts from Axios reporter Barak Revid, Graham said that he would wait until Sunday morning to see a doctor because he didn't want to miss his scheduled appearance on NBC's Meet the Press. And he even made a comment saying, hey, I can't die now. I got listing off all the things that he had to get done. Well, a few hours later, he ended up dying, and they've announced now the cause of death after that initial autopsy was aortic dissection, and it has something related to cardiovascular disease or the heart of the arteries, from what I read, due to his age, although he's not that old. But I don't know if he did cardiovascular training or anything like that. So that's what we have. Comments, Chief Schultz.
Well, thanks for saying he's not that old. I'm not quite there yet.
He's not.
Our definition of old person and premature death is on a sliding scale. The closer you get,
is true.
He was so young. That's too bad. And people die unexpectedly for hidden health issues, all the time. Not all the time, but it's not unusual. You see athletes that drop dead on the court and, those kind of stories. However, when you have a high profile, internationally, individual like this, like the senator, I think it's very appropriate for the FBI to investigate and to look for things. The political intrigue that goes under the surface that we just don't know about, I don't want to rely on spy novels and detective stories. But assassination of political enemies has been a historical tool of control, probably since the dawn of man. So it's something that we need to be sure and eliminate as a possibility. We know that Russia has been involved in killing enemies, not just on the battlefield, but in the spy world and then the political world. And so to eliminate that, I think, is very important. What immediately came to my mind, remember when Supreme Court Justice Scalia passed away? He was a little older, but it was still kind of unexpected and sudden. I think he was at a resort or something down in Texas. And even at the time, and this has been back during the last year of the Obama administration, I thought, man, I hope they're looking into this. Maybe I've read too many Tom Clancy novels or something, but I thought, man, you gotta look into that, because Obama would have had, and we're getting off the subject of Lindsey Graham, but Obama had the option, the opportunity to get a Democrat leaning justice in. Of course, the Republican Senate at the time blocked it, and we ended up getting Gorsuch instead of Obama, who had already nominated Kagan and Sotomayor. So, we've got a lot of mystery that kind of surrounds these kinds of things. And I think the American public deserves some comfort from answers. And to remind everybody that our candles don't get any longer, they get shorter. And, you better get ready.
Yeah. Yeah, it's part of life. So anyhow, certainly a loss, certainly a loss, and no one expected him, to go this quickly. And so
you know,
anyhow.
He's one of these Trump supporters that used to be a Trump hater.
Oh, he did.
And yeah, he said, you know, he was unfit for office and he kind of backed away from support after January 6th. So he's been up and down. Now, lately, he's been, you know, pro Save Act and buddies with Trump. And Trump was, you know, expressed great sadness to lose a partner. He was still one of the old school guys that knew how to make compromise and make decisions, you know, with the reality of politics present. But we see a lot of those in the Trump history, even J.D. Vance, Steve Bannon, in and out, pro, against. So he's got a very interesting history, but he was definitely on Trump's team during the last few years of his life.
Agreed. Well, I've got enough of the appetite for the next story. So our next one, we're going to be talking about the Democrats' meltdown over ICE shooting while their own shutdowns blocked body cams. This is like for justice, I'm going to, it's at rvmnews.com and a companion article at Tampa Free Press at tampafe.com. And, we've got a commercial break coming up. It's our first one. So I'll get to this in just a second, but the story you don't want to miss. You probably have not heard about this ICE shooting yet. There is not a video that I'm aware of that's been released yet. Although if there isn't, it'll be coming soon. Stick with us, guys. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. And we're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief all the way from Colorado. So thanks for being here, Chief. You know, we left off kind of whetting the appetite on our next story. We've got, it's at rvmnews.com and Tampa Free Press at tampafe.com. Democrats meltdown over ICE shooting while their own shutdowns blocked body cams. And we're talking about money. So on July the 7th, 2026, 6:50 in the morning, Central Time, ICE agents attempt to stop a vehicle in the Houston area, and they're targeting an illegal immigrant for an arrest. So we know he's a criminal because he's an illegal immigrant automatically, and we're in Houston, Texas. So the driver, Lorenzo Salgado Araujo, he's a Mexican national, unlawfully entered the United States, and he chose to flee. So he rams an ICE vehicle, refuses multiple commands, and attempts to run over an officer. In response, the officer fires in self-defense. You guys will be amazed at the outcry from some people on this one. Sounds cut and dry, right? Emergency services, they get called right away. Our bad guy transported to the hospital where he later dies. And we've got the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum. She ignores everything I just told you, and she turns this into like an international incident. She claims the man's only fault was not having papers, and conveniently leaving out that he attempted to run over a federal officer. She accused the United States of a history of oppressing migrants, and as though attempting to arrest a violent offender is oppression. And then we got the Democrats in Texas deciding to join the circus, according to the article. State Representative and U.S. Senate candidate James Tallarico, he posted a sorrowful social media statement that left out the reality of the confrontation. He described our bad guy as a father of three living peacefully in the Houston area for decades, fatally shot on his way to work. That's how he framed it. He demanded a full and independent investigation. What he left out was that Araujo rammed a federal vehicle and threatened an officer's life. This narrative made it sound like ICE agents opened fire on a commuter without cause. And then, of course, we go to the Democrats. If that's not enough, we have Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia of Texas delivered an even more embarrassing take. And, you know, it's written pretty well here at RVM, Red Voice Media. She scolded ICE agents for not shooting for not shooting the car's tires instead of the driver. She declared, quote, apparently ICE has learned nothing. If they really think a car is going to hurt somebody, I mean, even a kid will tell you, you shoot the tires, you don't shoot the driver, unquote. This is what this ignorant Congresswoman Sylvia Garcia said. She's going to get someone killed if anyone listens to what she's saying. I'd love to see her strap on. I know what you guys think, but I'm strap on a gum belt and put on a uniform and go out and try doing that and see how long she's able to survive on the street. So that said, Chief Schultz, the floor is yours.
Well, she's right. Any child will tell you that. And any grown-up that's done any research will not tell you that. And this is, you know, we hear this all the time, and my heart goes out to the families and even to the victim. I'm not sympathetic to people who try to hurt officers, but, you know, if he'd been working in Houston, supposedly working on his citizenship, and, you know, 30 years in country, but there's always an elevation to sainthood of anybody that gets shot by the cops, you know. And of course the police don't have the opportunity to have the open mic like these politicians who are compelled to take a certain posture. The facts are irrelevant because, and even when the facts come through in favor of the officer, if indeed it does come in favor of the officer and the government action, that decision will not matter anyway. It's not going to keep anybody from rioting. It's not going to keep any politicians from trying to defund. It's not going to get the activists satisfied and say, well, you know, in this case, that was probably the only thing the officers could do. So. And we can't necessarily postulate 100% that the officers were correct, but to merely describe this as these the press has down there as a man shot as he was commuting because he didn't have papers. It was even reported, and I'm sure you noticed this, that they actually got the wrong guy. Well, if I understand right, they were headed to a suspect's house. This guy happened to pass by the ICE agents, and the agent said, hey, that looks like our guy. And so they were going to make a contact, and the guy that they intended to contact had some violent tendencies. And so you're accountable for what you know or what you reasonably believe at the time to make a decision. And again, making a broad statement, you have to look at the offender or the alleged offender's actions and behavior before we can examine the thoughts and behavior of the officer. And if indeed the vehicle was being used as a weapon, and if indeed there were lawful commands being given, and we don't have body cam video, and you know, you point out the irony of that. The activists said, hey, we need body cams. And the administration said, you're right. So let's put body cams on. And then Congress said, nah, we're not going to give you any money for about half a year. And so to scream about the lack of body cams, it's the classic case of you point one finger, you've got four pointing back at you. It's just very frustrating. So I'm sorry for this guy. I'm sorry for the family. I'm sorry for the officers that had to take that kind of action. I'm sorry that the politicians can't stand back and just try to keep people calm until the facts are in. So it's a tragic situation all around.
Yeah, I hope people hold, you know, if you can't say anything intelligent, please don't say anything at all to our politicians. And I hope that they hold people, accountable. You know, it's really pretty embarrassing. So, but no, thank you.
Well, let me ask you this, Chip. In the bad press that you may have gotten,
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. But if there's something on the front page that's wrong, but grabs attention, and there is the rare correction, it's going to be on page 18 of section C of the New newspaper for those that still read newspaper.
Correct. No, you're absolutely right. And of course, when you are under the gun, right or wrong, you're just praying for the next guy to be in the limelight that replace you in the news, right? So that's what everybody
that's
waiting
right.
for. Yeah, it is.
Right.
All right. We're up for a second commercial break, guys. You don't want to miss what's coming up next. We'll be right back. All right, guys. It's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low-optics manner, utilizing what they're called their CD3, which stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. Amazing statistic. It's actually helped them achieve non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already tuned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. Go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Tell them Chip sent you. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief in Colorado. And Chief, are you ready to go with the feds overrule the Minnesota executive pardon? You ready to roll with that one? Because I think it's
an important adjunct to the story that we just talked about.
There is a relation. You're right.
Yeah.
So it is, it's by our second news. It's Tampa Free Press. You know, the first one we covered, Democrats meltdown over ICE shooting while their own shutdowns blocked body cams. And that was RVMnews.com, which stands for Red Voice Media. And I'm glad that she pointed out that the whole reason why they weren't wearing body cams is because the Democrats, shut down the government, shut down funding, and they didn't have the money in order for the rollouts. Although last I heard was that they anticipate within about 2 months that the rest of those body cams will be rolled out. But it's the Dems' own fault, and they're the ones that are complaining about this justified shoot. But also related on by TampaFreePress.com, the companion article, it's related but slightly different. Feds overruled Minnesota executive pardon to deport convicted child sex offender. Now, I have to imagine most people heard about this. There are some other players involved, which I suspect most people are unaware of because they've been kind of focusing on the governor. But a multi-level political and legal battle has culminated in the deportation of this bad guy, Lu Vang, 42-year-old Laotian national. Federal agencies intervened to strip his legal status despite a recent state-level pardon. It seemed apparent, probable, and maybe an attorney won't use the word allegedly, that he was pardoned to avoid being, kicked out of the country, by ICE. But our bad guy, Vang, entered the United States as a refugee back in 1994, later convicted in Minnesota. Gee, who's the governor there? Tim Walz, right? Minnesota back in 2006. First-degree criminal sexual conduct involving a girl, guess how old? 10 years old. Can you guys believe that this guy is the one being pardoned because they likely don't want him to be kicked out of the country? And so according to court records from his 2005 arrest, Vang initially described the abuse to investigators as a minor thing. Remember, it first-degree criminal sexual conduct with a 10-year-old girl. He described it as a minor thing, attributed it to foreign cultural norms from where he's from. Following his conviction, a federal immigration judge issued a final order of removal in October of 2006. Now, that's a long time ago. And though the deportation went unexecuted for nearly two decades due to historical difficulties in deporting individuals to Laos. Now, the case resurfaced on June the 10th with a three-member Minnesota Board of Pardons. And who is on that board? It is the governor, Tim Walz. We all know, we've heard the story, but also Attorney General Keith Ellison. It's like a pair of Walz, right? And Chief Supreme Court Justice Natalie Hudson, they voted unanimously to grant Vang a pardon. This bad guy, the illegal that was arrested for the sexual conduct, with the 10-year-old girl, who said that it was a cultural norm for where he came from. The decision drew sharp condemnation from federal agencies and Republican lawmakers and the general public, who argued that the action was an attempt to shield a violent offender from imminent deportation. There you go. Chief Schultz,
You know, I don't want to turn this into a partisan thing, but one of the divides that we see in politics, and obviously, you know, not all of people who voted or support in general Trump were in favor of his pardons. I certainly wasn't happy about the January 6th wholesale pardons. But so pardons are now a political hot topic. This guy's sentence, if he, you know, really the victim was okay with it, and the facts show that he was, you know, going to be a good citizen and all of that kind of stuff, then maybe a commutation, maybe a reduction of sentence, maybe some type of supervised release. But a pardon, which, as again, to the audience that may not know the difference between a commutation and a pardon, commutation says, okay, you're done with your sentence, even though you're legally obligated for another 10 years or whatever. We'll cut it. You can go home right now. But they still have that on their record. A pardon says it's as if you had never done it. So he walks away without a record of being a sex offender, against a 10-year-old. There's no rational justification that I think most of us can have in our mind to completely erase this guy's record as a sex offender with a small child. So it really smacks of politics. Now, obviously, if this deportation order that had been pending for two decades, for 20 years, spanning Democrat Republican administrations, that's inexcusable. I will say, if you know, there's no law that says if you're going to deport somebody, you got to send them back to where they came from, because there are countries that don't want to take them. And there are countries that say, nah, you give us $1 million a head, we'll take the sex offender and we'll let them live in the population, see how long that lasts. And, you know, the irony is that this guy was admitted as a Laotian because of the politics of the day when he was allowed to come over. And so it was a compassionate immigration policy that allowed refugees to come over. You know, we had a lot of the Vietnamese, Hmong, Laotian. I don't know exactly what era this was from when he came over. So the sluggishness of the system and the political implications of saying we're basically going to give the middle finger to the feds by pardoning this guy, therefore he won't have a criminal record, therefore he's not eligible for deportation on that basis, is clearly not fact-based in my view.
Yeah, really, really disappointing. You know, you know, there is something that maybe you can explain this to me, Chief. There is something that has bothered me for a while. We do have some of our most serious offenders that I'm talking murder, rape, that they will look. The choices are, even with a conviction, yeah, we can put these guys in. If we're not going to execute them, if it's not an executable offense, you know, then we're going to house them in jail for maybe decades and we're going to foot the bill for it. Or we could expel them from the country, right? We could deport them. We have a tendency for the most serious cases to go ahead and house those guys and to keep them in the prison system here. I know we're paying for it, but we're not deporting them, running the risk of them coming back in undetected and committing more crimes. Where do you sit on that? And how do you make sense of all that, as far as when you have a, you know, a moral, ethical obligation, you know, but you've got these battles to, are we going to pay taxpayer money to keep this guy in the prison system? Or are we going to kick him out of the country? What do you think?
An interesting figure, and I forget exactly the number, but we actually save money by getting offenders who are likely to reoffend. We actually save money by housing them until they're dead. Instead of letting them wreak havoc out on the streets, there are economic costs to having a repeat offender out there. Now, whether child sex offenders can be rehabilitated is, I think, continues to be an open question. The general public's consensus is no. Once a pedophile, always a pedophile, and I think most of us probably lean towards that. So regardless of the cost, if we keep another 10-year-old girl from getting assaulted and what does, how does that play out for, you know, the next 70 years of that person's life and their family and their children? It's not a cost to incarcerate some of these offenders. It's the price we pay as an investment in preventing future victims.
Okay, that's a good way to put it. So thanks for breaking it. See, that's why we have you on the show when we talk about these deep topics. So this is a perfect example.
I keep all my college textbooks and I read them every week just to keep up.
So that would be a good show, a good topic for, I mean, we cover the news, but that would be an interesting show with a lot of different people with a lot of different opinions. And I'm curious if, I think that people of minds and opinions would change if we all had a big conversation on that, because everybody's got their own opinion on, you know, what the threshold level is on keeping these guys in country or in the prison system or, you know, deporting them or whatever. And that's that information, that stat on it being cheaper to keep them in than having them releasing them back into society is an interesting one too. So, that would be a good show to have.
And the implication when we have somebody from a different culture, do we slide our morality or our laws, you know, to the left or the right in order to allow that, particularly in a current American country culture that continues to sexualize preteens and teenagers, and we categorize, some people categorize, instead of sex offenders, they're minor attracted persons, and we need to respect their choices, which is frightening.
Oh, perfect timing. Thanks, Chief, so much. Good, deep, important topic, though. We're going for our third commercial break, guys. Stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And there's some new information going on with GunLearn. So if you haven't heard, you may want to pay attention. Now, for starters, GunLearn.com is the first and it's the only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, here's the deal. That certification to become a certified firearm specialist, now it's worth college credits, even if you got it 5 years ago. And it's because they partnered with Smarter Degree and their university partners in order to pull that off. Now, they've been doing this since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. You can start the day with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar. And you can even get free training for yourself and all the personnel of your agency by hosting a seminar for absolutely no cost. It's an amazing opportunity. All you have to do is go to GunLearn.com to get more information. Hook up with the founder, Dan O'Kelly. Again, that website, it's GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief in Colorado. And we've been talking about some pretty deep topics. Or unless there's something you want to add on the previous topic, Chief, if you're ready to talk about Air Force One and the security leak, that's the next one up, unless you want to jump around.
No, I'm looking forward to getting to that one. We've got secret spy stuff going on.
So TampaFreePress.com, the important thing for our people watching the show is that if you've been paying attention, there have been a number of cases that have come about in recent weeks where media, and I'm talking journalists and reporters, have been challenged by putting some of the stuff in print or through other mediums that they're using, like anonymous sources and stuff, and the information's being challenged or they're being asked to give up their sources. I mean, this is actually occurring today. I can't say that I have a huge issue with it being done in certain circumstances, because the damage that could be done without there being a system of checks and balances, it's huge. So in this particular one, Tampa Free Press at TampaFP.com, the feds target reporters after Air Force One security leak. So we haven't had a lot of leaks in this administration. If you compare Trump 1.0 to 2.0, I mean, it's like there's no comparison. However, the Trump administration issued subpoenas on Friday to several New York Times journalists. It wasn't the Washington Post this time. It was New York Times, following the newspaper's recent coverage of alleged security vulnerabilities on the new Air Force One. Now, according to the publication, subpoenas demand that the reporters testify before a federal grand jury So that's got to give you a pucker factor in Manhattan. And that's supposed to happen this coming Wednesday. Federal agents delivered some of the subpoenas personally. The claims made by the New York Times regarding the subpoenas have not been independently verified. The newspaper's legal counsel criticized the government's actions. Here's what the newspaper said. The appearance of federal law enforcement agencies on the doorsteps of news reporters should shock the conscience of any American who believes in the Constitution and the press freedom it protects, according to David McCraw, the paper's lawyer. And he said this in a statement on Friday. But I got to tell you, David, if you're giving up vulnerabilities of Air Force One and saying specifically that, you know, their missile defense system sucks and you're risking the life of our president, I got an issue with that, too. And I suspect most Americans do. The escalating legal dispute stems from the president's recent travel logistics. It talks about, look, he had an international trip involving NATO, Turkey, the Royal Air Force Base. In Suffolk, in England, he departed on one of the older model Air Force One jets. The old and the new aircraft were both flown to the English base, but the president switched back to the newer plane for his final flight home to the Joint Base Andrews in Maryland. The sudden transition between the planes occurred during a volatile period in the U.S. foreign policy. There was a ceasefire with Iran, but it had collapsed, and now there were airstrikes going on. And Wednesday, the newspaper reported that the mid-trip plane switch occurred because the Secret Service had urged the change. A follow-up report published by the paper on Thursday alleged that the newer Boeing 747-8 aircraft, it lacked certain advanced security features present on the older model. And it specifically, I can't believe they put this in print, specifically pointed to anti-missile capabilities. Both of the newspaper's reports relied on information provided by what they're calling anonymous sources. Chief Schultz.
Well, this is complex. You know, there were security concerns about this gifted aircraft from the very beginning. I mean, how difficult would it be to put in some type of tracking or spy device or jammer or something? So I know they went over that aircraft with a fine tooth comb. And to say that we should be shocked about reporters being issued subpoenas to reveal their source, that's not really that uncommon. And you know, we need to remember that federal grand juries are strictly secret. We obviously wouldn't want to take this process. Oh yeah, my source is Joe Schmo. He works on the tarmac at such and such an airport. So it's still, you know, hopefully they can hold it confidential. And it is important that we identify people in very sensitive positions. Like, where are they getting this information? How do they know, and how are they giving it away? Why are they giving it away? What's their, you've done a lot of work with CIs, and I don't know how much parallel there is between, you know, a confidential source in the media and having a confidential source that you need to protect, and, you know, would mess up a lot of things if they got identified and then they get tangled in the legal system. Do they have to be identified so that the person that you arrested based on their information is able to confront their, you know, their accuser? I don't know if there's a parallel there or not. So a journalist is going to have to ask themselves the question, where do I stand ethically? Is it worth the story to risk national security? And if it is it worth it to risk my career or to being jailed? One of the weaknesses and pettiness of a lot of protests and rights claims, which is fine, is nobody's really willing to pay the price. Oh, I got tear gassed. I got a rubber bullet in my knee. I have a right to be out here, and that's true, but, you know, listen to the consequences, be willing to suffer the consequences. So, I'm curious. I did a lot of research. I'm probably on the NSA's list now because I was trying to figure out what does the original Air Force One, what kind of air defenses do they have? I don't know if they have the capacity to shoot back or whether it's all defensive and evasive kind of stuff. That's pretty standard air defense on military air. So I'm not answering the question, you know, is this a bad thing or good thing? but it's really complex.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, and there are some correlations between, you know, the COCI thing, but, you know, you can always get called on the carpet. You know, you can always, I mean, whether it's a journalist using anonymous sources or whether it's a cop using confidential sources. I mean, you know, we've got books, they have to be registered, they have to be redlined. If you get some, you know, if they prove that they're not trustworthy. And when I say redline, they can never be used again, and you have to document everything. And that information can come out in a controlled environment. It can be compelled. But I wonder what thresholds is there. I guess where my biggest question is that what information would a journalist come across from a valid source or an anonymous source or whomever, someone they knew really well or who they didn't really know that well? What information would they come across that they just simply would refuse to run with it? They wouldn't. They just say, "Oh wow, we can't. If this is true or that it's not true, either way, we can't. We can never put this out to the general public." I wonder what that threshold is, or if there is a threshold.
I think the threshold is, am I going to get a Nobel Prize or Pulitzer Prize or a promotion? So, yeah. You know, there are different motives for confidence informants, and there are different motives for people that want to get those stories out there. You know, Pentagon Papers is a classic example. If somebody wants to look back into the history of the 1970s, where you know, some of those papers about the Vietnam War were confidential and they were released and published by the press, went all the way to the Supreme Court. And journalists have a lot of privilege in our culture because of the First Amendment, and that's healthy. But, you know, your question, where's the line? Where's the limit? What's the motive? I don't know.
Why? Well, I know there's other, I mean, I know you've got editors and people in charge at these publications that are, well, I know that we referenced one attorney. They've got a room full of attorneys because they're so worried. They need to be concerned about liability and stuff. So I know it's got to run through the chain. Even when I've worked with media in the past, there's a lot of things that hoops that I've had to jump through when they've done stories with me or for me. I've had to answer a lot of questions in order to make sure it met a threshold. It just seems like that threshold has lowered quite a bit since those days, to where there's a lot of things that are coming out that really surprised me compared to what I would have seen 20 years ago.
Well, I would like to see an Air Force One that has full air to air and air to ground missile capacity. I mean, the Trump could make his bombing runs over Iran in his own plane.
you're gonna get some email on that one. Yeah, I can see they're gonna start having two-seater jets now, and Trump will be in one of them. There will be a fleet of them, you know, in the air at any given time, like maybe 12, and he'll be in one of them. Take your pick, you know. But
you think he wouldn't do that? You know he would.
Oh, he would do that in a heartbeat. You know, his size is probably the only thing that would limit him. You know, those things aren't really those cockpits, from what I understand. A buddy of mine was a fighter pilot, and I've had a couple and buddies, and they're not really built for big guys, you know.
So, no, right,
And then when you do the maneuvers and stuff, your shorter guys are, and I say shorter, you know, I mean, I'm 5'7", but 5'9", you know, they're built, their bodies are built better to be able to handle the G's and the getting the you know, the bigger the body, pushing blood and oxygen through the body on maneuvers like that, it gets tougher, you know. So, hey, we're coming up at the end. Thanks for watching the show. Chief Joel Schultz, watch us back tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern. And, you know, we've got, I really cut it close here. So let me go in and cover the sponsors real quick before we say our final goodbyes. But again, to our sponsors, thanks for sponsoring the show. We've got our title sponsor, Gallus.com. Don't forget that discount code, Radio15, to get 15% off your next purchase. We've got ComplianTechnologies.com, Gunlearn.com, MyMedicare.live, and TwoBellas.com.